Blog Talk Radio.
Today is with gospel singer Jonathan Butler. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to the show Talk with Angela Butler. I am all right. And how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to talk to you.
Yes, it's good to talk to you, too. We have the same last name.
I know that. That's crazy, huh?
Yeah, but we do.
So, you know where your name is from? Did you find out?
No, I don't know I was told it was from Africa, but the butlers I know are in Florida. Okay. So let's get into the interview.
Absolutely.
At what age were you when you first started singing?
Oh, I was probably at the age of 7, you know, I was definitely on stage earlier than that, probably from the age of 6, but 7 years old, I recall just being, you know, on stage and doing plays and doing singing in carnivals, Malay choirs, local cabaret type community variety shows. You know, my family always were involved in some type of music activity as kids.
So when do you learn to play the guitar acoustic?
I picked it up from my father and my late oldest brother, you know, my late dad and my late oldest brother, who were the quintessential guitar players, the real great guitar players that I grew up listening to with my dad and my oldest brother, and I really took a liking to the instrument. I was always, you know, attracted to the guitar, you know.
Okay. So you are from Cape Town, South Africa, am I right?
I was born in Cape Town, South Africa, yes, in a suburb called Belgravia, Athlone.
You were there when there was apartheid and all those things.
I grew up. Yes, I did. I mean, I grew up, any child born in South Africa my age grew up under apartheid, you know, and saw it firsthand and experienced it firsthand. So I know all about segregation and discrimination and what it's like to be a person of color and, you know, being discriminated against. But more importantly, thank God for Jesus who died for me and gave me a new life and a life that a heart took out the bitter one and put one of compassion and love inside of me, you know?
Yes. I understand what you're saying about, you know, discrimination. It's a lot of it in this country, too, which I know you are in this country.
Absolutely. I'm pretty acutely aware, you know. And it doesn't matter, you know, if you come from Africa and you land in the United States, you know a sense of history about what's going on around you. You have a sense of what's happening around you because of what we've come out ourselves. So, you know, it's just something that I know. And it's because of my experience growing up in South Africa and being all over Africa, you know. And as you rightfully say, there's a lot going on here still that needs to be dealt with, you know.
Yes, it is. It's not just in the police department, it's in employment, prison.
Well, racism starts at home, you know. Prejudice and racism starts at home, you know. You can train a dog to bite somebody, or you can train a dog to be passive and calm and submissive and play with other dogs. But, you know, human beings are so different in that sense. I've always believed that racism starts at home, you know. A child doesn't know racism unless – a child doesn't know it until you teach them, you know, what that is. So it's not just the police. It's you know, that policeman that was doing wrong and doing unjust. Yeah, absolutely. It starts at home. You know, it starts with what we are fed growing up as kids. And I saw a lot of that growing up in my country.
Yes, me too. Here in America, I've never been to South Africa, but here it's beautiful and very modern.
It's God country, absolutely. I mean, it is. You know, the cradle of civilization, my dear.
Okay. All right, so we're not going to keep talking about discrimination because we both know it still goes on. I've had young people tell me, what time period are you in?
I'm in Los Angeles, so I'm 2 hours from the two-hour time difference from where you are. So, you know.
Yeah. So do you write and compose your songs?
Yes, I do. I also co-write with a lot of people, you know, but I do write a lot of music on my own. Yes, I've always done that.
Okay. So was your album, Living My Dream, your newest album, was any of it composed and written by you?
Yeah.
It wrote by you,
instrumentals, all the instrumentals. One particular song is Heart and Soul, which I wrote, but most of the instrumental tracks is all me, and Heart and Soul, and there are a bunch of tunes that was co-written by my daughter Jody Butler and a friend of mine called Dennis Dodd, and of course Marcus Miller, the great legendary jazz bass player, and the incredible George Duke, the late George Duke. We co-wrote a song called "Be Still," and I wrote something with Marcus Miller called "Let There Be Light."
Okay. You know, I love your song, Falling in Love with Jesus. Did you also write beautiful song, Falling in Love with Jesus? I love that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. That song means a lot to me. Still means a lot to me.
Yes, it does to me, too. I love to hear you sing it. Falling in Love with Jesus, best thing I ever did.
Yes, amen.
How did you feel? What were your feelings when you first heard of the death of Mr. Nelson Mandela?
We all, you know, as a nation, we were all deeply impacted. Even though we knew President Mandela was well in years and God had plans for his life, and he lived out these remaining days with dignity and pride and such great light he brought into the world. He was to our nation and to the world. So it was a celebration, but also a great loss, because he was a great light to us, you know, and he was a pillar of strength during apartheid. You know, so it definitely moved all of us. It moved me. It impacted me in a major, major way, because, you know, I met him and talked with him and sang for him and being in the same company with him and his presence and met some of his comrades that were with him in prison. So it really impacted for everyone, you know, of South Africa, even around the world. I mean, from President Bill Clinton to President Obama, people that he had impacted. So it affected the world, I really believe so. Just like Gandhi did, I think it really impacted the world.
Yes. You know, I don't know. Well, I do know. Not too many years after Mr. Nelson Mandela became your president in South Africa. Not too long after that, President Barack Obama became president here in the United States of America. And I think that had a lot to, had something to do with Mr. Mandela.
Well, you know, well, let's put it this way. I think as a, you know, this is just my two cents, the Jonathan Butler two cents from South Africa. I live in the United States now, and I think that, you know, our times are in God's hands. And I think, you know, as we discern the times and we see as one president leaves, another one comes in, and how people are hungry for change and how people are hungry for a newness, a freshness. And it did, you know, let's not forget, even though there's racism in the world and there's prejudice in the world and what's happening in Ferguson or the city of Ferguson, we must never forget that this country has a black president. And it says a lot about the strength of America, the openness of America, and the unity of America to want to see a change and embracing a change. You know, even though there's been criticism, Americans embraced the change that they wanted. And this man he came in, and President Barack Obama became the president of the United States. And his dignity, his conduct, his behavior, his self-respect, he sort of was a light to the nation and nations that America is progressive and will continuously be progressive, you know. And that's what's cool, you know. In England, you're going to have an English president, prime minister. In Africa, you're going to have a black president. In America, you will see a female president very soon, or you'll see a Latino president, you know. And I think this country is, what I love about this country is that it's very progressive, and the people embrace the change. And I think that's what's great. That's what's great, and that's what makes this country great. Even though it has its, you know, as like every country does, have their issues. So,
yes.
You know, we must not forget that this country is very amazingly progressive and open to a change when it does present itself.
Yes.
So, and that's me coming from South Africa, observing what America is about. And I'm very grateful for America embracing me and my children and my, you know, and my family. So it just comes from a place of, you know, how I like to tell my wife, I told my wife this years ago, I said, you know, pray for the city that you are in, that God will bless it. Because if God blesses the city that you are in, that he brought you to, then he will bless you back. You know, so instead of criticizing the city that you're in, that God brought it to you, pray for it, that God will continue to use it and use you in there to bring about, to help and assist. And, you know, so to me, it's, I feel very, very blessed to be here, you know.
Yes. I was born here in Florida. Matter of fact, I'm still in the town that I was born in. And I've seen change. I've seen some things change, and I've seen some things that is saying the technology is much better, more progressive. But I also see the bad things. And you're like, people should pray for their towns and cities and states, even. Pray for America.
To me, that's almost a commandment. That's almost a commandment because we, you know, the city that blesses you, pray for that city. Because if things go wrong in that city, it will go wrong for you too. See, I think
yes.
I think ultimately what's happening in Ferguson is now affecting the entire city of Ferguson, not just whites or blacks. It's affecting all of Ferguson. And now everybody is going to either embrace a new change, a new walk of sensitivity and compassion towards mankind, or it's just not going to stand. And a city divided, amen, a house divided cannot stand, says the Bible. So I truly believe that. And Mandela came to unify. He, as a president, united our nation. And I think Barack Obama, he didn't divide America. He became a voice of reason, and he's a great diplomat. He's a great speaker. So I think he represents unification. He represents hope to the black community, and he also embraced change for the white community. Say, hey, you know, this is you know, I'm like a Martin Luther King said, you know, don't look at the man because of his color, but the content of his character. And I think this man has great character. You know, as a president, he has great character in the face of criticism, adversity, and I mean, you know, let's face it, he became the president when the economy was dwindling and wars were being held, and he held on, and so it's commendable, you know, it's commendable. And I think as a nation, this place is very progressive, and that's what I love about the United States, you know.
Yes, that's true. America is progressive. But also, when you're talking about Ferguson, there are too many Ferguson, Missouris in this country.
This is just one this is shining a light for everyone to see that there are more cities like that, you know.
Yes. Somebody that was on my show, Kurt Robinson, I know this is a show about you, but he has said that boycotting would help a lot. Boycott different things in America. So, we'll see what happens.
Well, I told a friend of mine this morning, a pastor friend of mine, I said, we should be appalled at the injustice that happens daily. We should be appalled, and we should be able to do something about it. And we shouldn't stand back and just wait for government to do something. I think as communities, as the church, needs to step up also and play its role, bringing about you look at this, the circumstances in which people find themselves in, and you have to see that this is not a lost generation, that it's a generation of great, you know, potential and gifts that can be, you know, that can be channeled in the right way. And so we should be appalled. That, in my opinion, we should be appalled at what we see happening in Ferguson, and stand up to say, you know, for every other city that is going through that, we need to kind of deal with that. You know what I mean? You know.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I think also as a community, not as just leaders, but as a community, we also have a sense of responsibility to our young people. You know, our parents have a responsibility to our kids. You know, we all have a responsibility to each other's homes, in our streets, across the street, behind us, you know, in front of us. And, I mean, you know, the Bible says all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. And we, you know, maybe at the end of the day, at the end of all of this, we'll see a silver lining that Michael Brown didn't die in vain, you know, or the child that was killed in Florida didn't die in vain, you know, that their voices, that they are still speaking, even from the grave, they are still speaking. And perhaps Trayvon Martin, and that now people can listen. People can see it face to face. It's affecting every single person, the nation, you know. And I think, you know, once the leaders start speaking out and saying this has to end, that's when things, you know, perhaps we will begin to see a real movement, you know, or a revival in the community to start. Listen, in my opinion, this should start a revival in the community to snatch our children from these things that are happening. You know what I mean?
Yes. You know? Yes. I'm a grandmother too, so yes, I understand what you're talking about. So, what is the Johnson Butler Foundation?
Well, you know, it's everything to do with giving back and supporting and being there to support my communities in South Africa and giving back. And this is in the educational world, this is in the arts, this is in music, this is also in the substance abuse situation, which is quite an epidemic in South Africa. Young people with substance abuse, the lack of education, the underprivileged that does not have great education. And so we are slowly establishing ourselves and as a foundation to give back to my communities and the communities at large in South Africa.
Okay. So it sounds like the problem with drugs is worldwide.
Of course. It's like everything we talked about is worldwide. And I think, you know, in my later years, I want to be able to do something meaningful and positive with my life, and that is to help my communities, in all the communities in South Africa, by giving back and rallying support from perhaps the U.S., from all my friends in the music industry cause, you know?
Yes, yes, support your cause. That's right. So I was reading about you, and it seems like this past year you have developed a passion for golf.
Yeah, but I got a bit of golf elbow right now. I'm hurting right now. So I'm going to be out of commission
for like a week or two,
but I have a deep passion for it. Yes, I do.
Okay. So did Mr. Tiger Woods have anything to do with your love for golf? Did he inspire you in a way, or did you just decide to start playing?
No, it had nothing to do with him. It had to do with you know, I think it found me. It found me, and that's what is beautiful about it. That little white ball and that club found me at the right time in my life, and I really do enjoy it. I really love it.
Okay. So you have this, you said, and I read that you said you had spent your whole life taking care of people ever since you were 7 years old, and you said,
yeah,
this is the season of me. Would you explain what that means?
Well, just what it means, you know, it's like, you have to, you know, take control of your life and what's important to you, what's your passions in life, and pursue those things and let anyone distract you from it, you know, because I've done everything. I've kept my, you know, I've raised my children. I have, you know, married for 33 years. I serve the Lord, and I love what I do. I love being a blessing to people all over the world. But, you know, it's when I want to go out and play golf, I want to go out and play golf, and I don't want to answer to anybody about that. That's something I enjoy. I enjoy cooking. I enjoy traveling. I enjoy playing golf, and it's just a season of me. It's like, you know, we all need to find those things that mean something to us personally and have self-fulfillment. It's called self-fulfillment, you know, and that's great. That's what it's about, you know. You know, I always say if my mother didn't have a job, she would have died a lot sooner, but she always worked, and she always loved working, and she always loved serving, and she always loved taking care of things, and, you know, until she was 86. So, you know, and I saw how hard she worked, and she never had time to take care of her and what was important to her. And so, you know, I realized as I'm getting older that it's important to not be selfish about it, but to start thinking about you, to start thinking about me and what's important to me, and slow things down and simplify things a little bit more. You don't have, bigger is not always better, you know, more, you know, is not always good, you know, so it's those things that matter, you know.
Okay, all right. All right, I'm reading about how you said you're readjusting yourself as a person and to be a better person. So that's also what the season of me means.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, refocusing, going inward and looking at what you can, how you can do better. And, of course, God also, you know, having to prune away some of the excess baggage in your life. And then you simplify your life and you find those things that really matter to you and you enjoy those things in the season of your life. And, you know, like I said, I have raised my children. I'm now a grandfather, so I share my grandchild, and I love her to death. And she's able to experience some of the things that her mother experienced when her mother was her age. So that's really beautiful, you know. Yeah.
So do any of your children sing? I don't know how many children you have, but do they
sing?
Yeah,
they do. Yes, they do.
Okay. That is great. I don't, so you're not the only, so they copying their father. following your footsteps for the fun.
Oh, no, baby, you know, one is in music, one is in sports, and one is a teacher. So it's great to see them all doing, you know, doing what they love to do, you know. And that's the thing is you have to sort of, you mentor and you show by example. As you do, they see, and they take away from that, you know. Yeah.
Okay. So I kept you a little longer than what I was told to.
Okay.
And I apologize for that. I would love one day to have you back on the show. I know you're very busy. But one day I would like to have you back on the show.
Not to worry. Let's set it up for next time.
And your new CD, I look forward to being able to buy it. I believe it's called Living My Dream. So, all right, so I'm going to end the interview because they told me not to keep you over 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay. Well, let's set it up for next time as well.
Okay. I'll set it up for next time. Okay. I will.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And we do have the same last name. That's intriguing to me. Yeah.
I know. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
You don't meet a lot of buttons.
All right. Here. Yeah,
well,
I've met a lot of buttons.
Yeah.
So?
Well, you take care.
You too, Mr. You too, Jonathan Butler. Have
take
a good
care,
night.
Mother. Okay. Okay, bye.
All right, listeners, you've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. The guest was Jonathan Butler. He has my namesake. I have his, so I don't know. But like I said, you've been listening to Jonathan Butler on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Great guest. I look forward to having him back. I hope everyone enjoyed the interview as much as I did. I'm going to play some commercials. And then I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweavers.
Hey, this is Raquel Charles, and you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler, where the interviews are hot and right on time.
All right, listen, that was Raquel Charles. She's a singer. I encourage people to go out and purchase her CD, Raquel Charles, and support her in her musical career. Also, I like to remind people of Ms. Tawana Leo. Her song, Crazy Love, is available. Is either available or not. Available now or very soon. She also has some old CDs, older CDs that she's done in the past. And you're in for a treat when you go to Reverber Nation, YouTube, or wherever you know music's sold pretty much. And you listen to Tawana Leo's voice, you are in for a beautiful treat. And she's also singing with Miss India Ivory. Also, I like to talk about James McDonald's book, The Love I Never Had. He's an author and inventor. I'd also like to give remind listeners of Airport Eclectic Antiques and Treasures, owned by the Nicholsons. They're in Hatfield, Georgia, in the Delta offices. So stop by and see what they have. They also have an auction house there. Also, Tamara Perry Fraser. The book In His Old Time was written about her coach, Coach Faye Baker. I encourage you to go out and purchase her book, too. thelambazon.com, and, of course, Mr. Johnny Mack. Mr. Johnny Mack is a motivational speaker. Yes, motor is what I said. He's very good, so go to Amazon. So go to Amazon.com and check out Mr. Johnny Mack. All right, thank you all for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Good night.